Welcome once again to our series on the Da Vinci Code, or deciphering the Da Vinci Code, which was such a well-known novel in our country, even in other countries, made into a movie that wasn't so popular, has come out just recently now in video, and is even coming out in some games. So it's still influencing our culture and our society, and it, we're trying to talk about deciphering what is the why there was so much Catholic and Protestant criticism of this novel. And of course, it was based mostly on that it supposedly had such great historical research that you could bank on what was said was historically true. And of course, many people say, well, it was revisionistic, or revising and just rewriting history, even though it was a novel, that it took names and places and people and completely rewrote the accurate history that we know about them, particularly Jesus, Peter, Mary Magdalene, Opus Dei, the Priory of Zion, the Merovingian dynasty, etc. So our guest again is Ron Eldred, who teaches history and religion and government at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Father Larry Moran, the pastor emeritus at St. Patrick Catholic Church. Ron, well, we got up all the way. We spent a little bit of time, especially on the Gnostic Gospels, which we're going to come up to again, that there are really only four Gospels that have been accepted by Christianity: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And all these other Gospels, supposed Gospels, have been declared inauthentic from the very early first days of the Church, perhaps beginning with the fathers like Irenaeus and the like. But we'd like to go on to how Leonardo da Vinci, the great painter, artist, scientist, creative mind, how he fits into the Da Vinci Code, because it's named after him, Leonardo da Vinci, and how he figures into this whole novel.
Well, the name of the novel, The Da Vinci Code, suggests that he plays a big role in the story, and he does indirectly. To begin, although Brown refers to Leonardo da Vinci simply as Da Vinci throughout the book, his real name is Leonardo and not Da Vinci. Da Vinci is the name of the city in Italy from which
Da came. Means from.
Yes, and Da okay. means from. Carl Olson and Sandra Meisel, in their great debunking of the Da Vinci Code, a book called The Da Vinci Hoax, write that early in the novel, the main character, Professor Robert Langdon, whom we've talked about in our summary, makes several incorrect or misleading statements about Leonardo. Among these are, and I only picked out about four of eight or ten, that he was a flamboyant homosexual, that he was also a worshiper of nature's divine order, that he produced an enormous amount of breathtaking Christian art, and that he accepted hundreds of lucrative Vatican commissions. As I said, this is only about four of eight or ten that they actually deal
sure.
with in their book. And one can read Olson and Meisel, or one of the other books that are critics of the Da Vinci Code, to get a detailed refutation of these and other claims made by Dan Brown regarding Leonardo da Vinci. But I'll just say that many reputable historians and art critics maintain these statements are dubious at best, and are they completely incorrect. Both major and minor details indicate that Brown's knowledge of Leonardo's life and work is suspect. For example, no reputable art historian believes he was a homosexual, or at least there's any proof that he was. Furthermore, he didn't paint a lot of breathtaking Christian art. In fact, Olson and Meisel maintained that he was infamous, I quote them, quote, infamous for his meager production of finished artwork, end of quote. They quote the Encyclopedia of World Art as saying, quote, Leonardo's output of paintings was unusually small. A total of 17 commonly accepted works has been preserved. And of this total, 4 are unfinished, end of quote. In regard to Brown's claim that Leonardo received hundreds of lucrative Vatican commissions, Olson and Meisel state that the best estimate, according to existing records, is that Leonardo received only one commission from the Vatican. So much for the hundreds of Vatican commissions, in other words. And as I said, if you read Meisel and the Da Vinci Hoax, they have many, many things just about Leonardo alone that are erroneous, that are not factual, that are disputed or refuted by not just religious and Catholic critics, apologetic critics, but also by reputable art historians and art critics and other historians.
Okay. So what role does Leonardo da Vinci, Leonardo from the town of Vinci in Italy, play in the novel?
Well, according to the Da Vinci Code, Leonardo was a member of the Priory of Zion, or Sion, once being the Grand Master, and he knew the secret of the Grail, according again to the Da Vinci Code. In fact, Brown claims that he revealed the secret in the Last Supper.
In the painting,
The Last Supper, yes, which is painted on a wall in, I believe, some church in Italy. And I think it was restored back a number of years ago, if I recall right. It was getting in pretty dilapidated condition.
Okay.
It's actually, I think it's painted into the plaster, some kind of a technique. I've forgotten the fresco type of painting, yes. But Olson and Meisel, and by the way, Meisel, I believe she lives over in Indianapolis.
Really?
Yes. And
Is she a she?
Yes.
Is Meisel a she?
Yes.
And Olson is a man?
Yes.
Okay. I saw him on EWTN one time talking about the Da Vinci Code, and they were had done considerable research.
Oh, yes. Their book's a wonderful book. One of the best. It is the best. The Da Vinci Hoax, I think, is the best of a dozen or so books that's out on that subject.
Okay, and you read most of those books?
Several of them.
Okay.
And we're going to quote several of them as we go down through the series. But Olson and Meisel and others, other critics, identify at least three key claims that are incorrect regarding the Last Supper in the Da Vinci Code. So we're going to focus on the Last Supper painting a little bit here.
Okay.
The first, the missing chalice, indicates that Leonardo is sending a hidden message about the true Holy Grail. This is one criticism. We'll come back and refute it shortly.
Right.
The second criticism is, or claim, this is a claim of Dan Brown, the figure to the right of Christ is Mary Magdalene, and not the Apostle John. And he says this is evident due to the feminine appearance of the figure, as well as a V-shape, that is the grail, the chalice, and the female womb symbolizes that. And an M shape, a Magdalene in the composition. And three, Peter is depicted making a threatening, cutting gesture across the neck of Mary Magdalene. Meanwhile, the hand wielding a dagger is disembodied and belongs to no one. These are things that come out of the Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
And I'll briefly answer each of these claims in turn.
All right, let's take them one by one, Ron. How about the claim that the missing chalice indicates that Leonardo is sending a hidden message about the true Holy Grail, not being a cup, but being a person?
Well, in the first place, there is no missing chalice, as Brown claims. He's assuming that the chalice is similar to a chalice used at Mass. And actually, I've read that the painting contains 13 cups, one for each of the participants of the Last Supper. And I did look at it one day. I didn't count it, but there are cups sitting around in front of each of the 12 people that are in the picture. In any event, the painting does not depict the moment of consecration anyway. Painting, it depicts the moment that Jesus says that one of the apostles will betray him. Therefore, the chalice would not be the focal point of the painting anyway.
Okay. So the consecration is when Jesus said, "This is my body."
Yes.
Take and eat. This is the cup of my blood. Take and drink.
And obviously, they're going to be acting differently. The figures portrayed, if this is at a different time other than the consecration, sure, then they're going to be portrayed differently. And they are, of course.
Okay. All right. How about the claim that the figure to the right of Christ is Mary Magdalene and not the traditional understanding being the Apostle John, the youngest of the apostles?
Well, according to Brown, this is evident due to the feminine appearance of the figure, as well as a V shape, that is the grail, the chalice, and the female womb, and then this M shape, which he says stands for. Supposedly he sees this as a secret code, you see, hidden in the painting. And this M shape supposedly meaning Magdalene in the composition. Well, we would have to be able to display a copy of the painting to give our listeners, you know, a true idea of what Brown is talking about here. But the simplest answer is that it was the practice of artists during the Renaissance to depict young men with a feminine appearance. And John, you know, John was a young disciple. It's believed that he was probably a teenager in his late teens when he was Jesus's apostle, disciple, and probably, you know, 17, 18 years old, something like that. And probably one of the reasons that Jesus had a special, you know, place for John because he was such a young man.
And he was especially very close to John, from we know from the scripture.
Well, he refers to, in his own gospel, the Gospel of John, he refers to himself as the beloved disciple. Moreover, if the figure to Jesus' right is Mary Magdalene, well, where's John at?
Okay.
And no art critic or historian would agree with Brown that the V-shape connecting Jesus and the figure to his right represents the grail or female womb, or an M-shape that he detects representing Mary Magdalene. In other words, he's seeing things in there and making things out of something that no art critic or art historian or any other historian see.
Okay. Now, the reason we're going into some of these details is to show that historically accurate, artistically authenticated and interpreted, all through the novel, there are great serious errors. And so to try and say that we know now the church was trying to hide that Mary Magdalene and Jesus was married and they had a child who became the source of the Merovingian kings, and the church had held these deceived people for centuries and centuries. We're not getting into these details because the details are that important, but because of what he concludes from them.
Right.
Okay, well, how about a claim that Peter is depicted making a threatening, cutting gesture across the neck of Mary Magdalene in the picture of the Last Supper that's painted on the wall?
The hand wielding a dagger is disembodied and belongs to no one. As we have ascertained, the figure in Jesus' right is St. John and not Mary Magdalene. So he's not making a threatening gesture, you know, toward Mary Magdalene's neck with this knife. There is a knife there laying on the table. What's more, the painting depicts the scene when Jesus told the apostles that one of them would betray him. And Peter is simply reacting to this disclosure in an excited manner. Regarding the disembodied hand and the menacing dagger, Brown refers to it in the novel, a look at the painting makes it clear that the hand is Peter's hand, not disembodied. in which he's clutching the sword, in which he later used to cut off the ear of the high priest's servant.
Okay, now this is what art critics themselves have concluded. Understanding this correctly? Okay, how about some of Leonardo's other paintings, such as the Mona Lisa and the Virgin of the Rocks?
Well, Brown also makes some equally absurd claims about Leonardo's Mona Lisa and the Virgin on the Rocks. There's actually two copies of this Virgin on the Rocks. Well, Brown claims in the Da Vinci Code that the Mona Lisa is actually an androgynous self-portrait of Leonardo as a woman. That is, what we moderns would call a man in drag. Dressed up like a woman.
All right, a man dressed up like a woman.
Yes. Okay. Olson and Meisel state that, quote, according to the novel, androgyny reflects the sacred union of male and female, which is implied in the holy union of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Brown contends through his characters that such parity between the cosmic forces of masculine and feminine has long been a deep threat to the established power of the church. He also claims that the name Mona Lisa is actually an anagram for Amon Laisa, referring to the ancient Egyptian father and mother gods, Amon and Isis. Again, any knowledgeable art critic or historian will tell us this claim is simply a figment of Dan Brown's imagination. Most historians believe that the painting is a portrait of the wife of a prominent Italian nobleman named Francesco del Giocondo. And Mona is a contraction of Madonna, meaning my lady, or Madame. Mona Lisa thus means Madam Lisa, and not this combination of a masculine and feminine deities of Amon and Isis. These are Egyptian gods and goddesses.
Okay, so androgyny, which is a big word for most of us, is a combination of man and woman into one figure.
Yes.
Okay, and that's where, again, you're quoting that about the Mona Lisa, because it seems that Dan Brown's imagination, again, according to art critics, is really not on target.
Well, now, he's trying to make the claim that Leonardo was into this goddess worship, that he was into this sacred feminine, and that he portrays himself as an androgynous. The Mona Lisa is really him dressed up like a woman, basically.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like, from what Dan Brown tells us in the Da Vinci Code, that the history of the past 2,000 years, now this is a strange statement, but this is what I hear him saying, is the story of the struggle between the Catholic Church and the Priory of Zion over keeping secret the truth about Jesus and Mary Magdalene really being married and fathering a child and starting a Merovingian dynasty in France and Germany.
Well, it certainly seems that way.
Okay.
According to the Da Vinci Code, the Church has suppressed the truth about Mary Magdalene and Jesus Christ for 2,000 years. And the reason being that the Church fears the power of the sacred feminine. Fears the power of the sacred feminine, which they have demonized as satanic. In this regard, Amy Welborn, we haven't mentioned her yet, in her excellent book, Decoding Da Vinci, states of the function of the Church as described in the novel, quote, "The Church, through its establishment of the canon of Scripture, doctrinal statements, and even treatment of women, has worked to suppress the truth about the Holy Grail, and, by extension, the sacred feminine, while the Knights Templar and the Prior of Zion struggled to protect the Grail, that is, Mary's bones, her bloodline, and devotion to the sacred feminine. I might add that...
That's the end of a quote.
Yes, that's the end of a quote.
Now, what was Amy Welborn... I didn't get... who was she quoting there? That's what the novel is describing the church as?
Yes, that's her describing the novel, actually.
Okay. And we, of course, would disagree with thoroughly that what the novel is describing about doctrinal statements and the church has worked to suppress this truth about Mary Magdalene and Jesus.
I might add to that her quote that the list of alleged sinister organizations, Opus Dei, to that list of the Knights Templar and the Prior of Sion.
Okay.
And
all right. Now,
in fact, let me make a comment. It's a mysterious Opus Dei albino monk by the name of Silas who murdered Sophie's grandfather to keep
in the novel
him from revealing the secret. So this is how Opus Dei comes into the story, at least in part.
Okay. And Opus Dei, after this novel came out, made a great attempt to clarify its origins, its purposes, its history that had been so really maligned and lied about in the novel.
Yes.
Okay. Well, could you say a word about the Priory of Sion and the Knights Templar, which are actual historical names?
That's true. The fact page, which is right at the beginning of the novel, states that the
Bibliothèque Nationale,
I've said it properly, Daddy, the Bibliothèque Nationale, that is France's National Library, possessed documents that prove Leonardo, along with a lot of other famous men, had been Grand Masters of the Priory of Sion. It was as Grand Master that he was privy to the secrets that he supposedly had in his paintings. Now, this is Brown, of course, making these claims. Brown claims that the Knights Templar, which is a military order that helped construct or conquer Jerusalem during the First Crusade, established the Prior of Sion in 1099 as the secret wing of the organization. The role of the Priory, according to the Da Vinci Code, was to protect the Sangreal documents. Sangreal meaning Holy Grail.
Okay.
And protecting, in other words, Mary Magdalene's bones and the documents that proved, the royal bloodlines of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And not only that, but the Knights Templar were to protect the Merovingian royal line and the Priory also, who were the descendants of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, according again to the novel. Brown claims that the Prior discovered an ancient record revealing the shocking fact that Jesus had been married to Mary Magdalene, then allegedly found the revealing documents when they found them allegedly when excavating the Temple Mount, which is the hill believed to be the ancient Moriah, or Mount Moriah in Jerusalem, where King Herod's temple had stood until the Romans destroyed it in the year 70 AD. And today, the mosque, the Muslim mosque,
Al-Aqsa?
Yes, something like that.
No, it's, okay.
They call it the Temple Mount, though.
All right. It's on the Temple.
The Golden Dome.
The Golden Dome.
Also it's referred
right.
to as.
Yeah.
We've already told the story how Brown says that after Jesus' death on the cross, Mary bore him a child and then was forced to flee to Egypt, then to France, where their descendants eventually helped found the Merovingian royal dynasty. Now, Brown, he does correctly claim in his fact page that the Priory of Sion was founded in 1099. But what he fails to tell us is that the organization ended in 1617. When its last members joined the Jesuits. And as Mark Shea and Edward Shree, and we haven't quoted them yet either, tell us in their very great book here, The Da Vinci Deception is the name of the book, this would have made it awfully difficult for Sir Isaac Newton, Victor Hugo, or Leonardo da Vinci to have been members, let alone Grand Masters. In other words, they come along, Da Vinci came along before that, but the others come along after that. After 1617.
Okay. Well, Brown bases much of his speculation about the Priory of Zion on certain documents found in the Bibliothèque Nationale, the National Library of France. What can you tell us about those documents?
Well, this is a very interesting story. These documents, called the Les Dossiers Secrets, or secret documents, documents in English, were proven to be a big hoax. Brown appears to have accepted them at face value, however. They were forged and planted in the library by a man by the name of Pierre Plantard, who, according to Shea and Shree, was a French anti-quote, a French anti-Semitic crank who founded the new Priory of Zion in 1956. Plantard then wrote lots of National Enquirer type or quality articles in the 50s and 60s claiming to link the secret society to the medieval priory, end of quote. The documents were discovered in 1975 in the library and supposedly identified, they supposedly identified past grand masters of the priory. Plantard claimed to be the present grand master himself, and that he was a member of the Merovingian royal line and a descendant of Jesus and Mary Magdalene.
Okay.
In fact, Plantard later admitted that all of this was just nothing but a big hoax.
He himself admitted that.
Yes. And then Shea and Shree point out that, quote, some of this unsubstantiated nonsense about Jesus and Mary Magdalene was repeated as fact by authors of other crank books, such as the Templar Revelation and Holy Bread, Holy Grail. Brown simply accepts their claims with complete credulity and passes it on to the reader as, quote, fact, end of quote. Shea and Shree tell us that even the authors of the Templar Revelation didn't believe that these documents were genuine, mainly because it was discovered that they had been printed on the same press that Plantard used to print his right-wing newsletters and broadsides. And they conclude by saying, in short, there was a real Priory of Zion, founded in 1099, but it has no relationship to the Priory of Zion that exists today. There is no reputable evidence that Leonardo da Vinci ever heard of the original Priory, much less was a member, end of quote. And nor did the original Prior have any Grand Masters, because Priories don't have Grand Masters. They have what are called Priors instead.
Okay. Now, it seems like a person could say, well, all these details aren't that important, why are we talking about some of these details? But we're talking about some of the details because the book, in the beginning, the book has this fact sheet, and that these have been historically accurately researched. The art messages, the art research, history research. And so we're just trying to point out that over and over again, even though it's a historical novel, that these claims are completely twisting history.
Well, it wasn't just the ordinary reader that was duped by these things. Remember right in the first series, the first program, that we talked about various book reviews by leading magazines and journals that talked about the impeccable research and the accurate historical detail and all that kind of thing.
Right. All right. Once again, Ron, our time has run out. So thanks to our listening audience. May God bless you always and in all ways.
Oh,